Happy Friday, Tappers. It is another edition of the Daily Tap. It is April 27th. We are here with you, excited to talk to you on the final day of the week. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Yes, the Brewers did lose, which we'll talk about a little bit, but it was much a good Thursday evening with the Packers doing the damn thing, playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers, and you had the Bucks forcing a game seven in a hell of a victory for the Milwaukee Bucks. Almost the Green Bay Packers there. This is the last podcast for me of the week. I will be up at Elkhart Lake with my boy Shea Ken getting married. Very excited for him and his future wife. But that does not mean the blog or the Daily Tap stops. We'll have some day three sleepers for you on Saturday on Snowtap WI. It's a website to keep you up to date on all the draft stuff, as well as Nolan Murphy will be doing a Daily Tap on Sunday, wrapping up the NFL draft as a whole. I'm assuming he will talk a little bit about the Bucks Game 7. I will have the game on DVR and watch it on Sunday. I'll have some extended thoughts about a game seven and a wedding in a little bit here. So before we dive in, let's chat. It is, we know where to find us. Snowtap WI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all over the place, as well as iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher. You guys can subscribe anywhere. Keep the listens coming. We always appreciate it. Let's have a Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so the Milwaukee Bucks, it was one of those games where I think everyone was a little on edge, especially after the first quarter. We've seen first quarters, whoever wins the first quarter technically has won the game. Now, granted, this was closer than the other first quarters. The Bucks had only trailed by two. They had the quote-unquote momentum heading into it as they went on a 7-0 run to finish that quarter. And the Bucks kind of never stopped after that 7-0 run. They ended up having an 11-point lead at halftime. They had a strong lead in the third quarter, and it got it up to 14. Now, the Celtics did come back, and it was a close game for a decent amount of that fourth quarter, and the Bucks pulled away. Malcolm Brogdon hits a big three to push the lead out to six. Giannis has a few big buckets. The Bucks were as good as they've been this entire series. I get they blew out the Celtics in Game 3. Well, the Celtics really did not play well in that game. Game 4, I think the Bucks played okay, but the fact is that they let Boston come back in Game 4 to nearly beat them. I think this was the best overall game that the Bucks have played. That's exactly what you want heading into a Game 7, where the Bucks will be heading to Boston, where they haven't won, but they've came damn close. And that's encouraging. You know, I feel like there is something to be said about coming close and knowing that you can do it. The Bucks know they can win in Boston. The Bucks know that they can win this game. They have almost done it. They almost did it in Game 1. They were an overtime period away from they wrapping up this series in 6, and we're talking about Bucks Philly on Saturday night, not a Bucks Celtics Game 7. Game 5 also could have easily went into the Bucks' favor. It was a rock fight, as we mentioned, and the Bucks, as Gus Johnson said in that broadcast, the Bucks were so close to making a run and winning that game, but Boston hit big shots and came together. And what will have to happen in Game 7 is the Bucks are going to need people to step up, like the Thon Makers, the Matthew Dellavedova, Jabari Parker. I mean, they're going to need more than just Giannis and Chris. Now, Giannis was a big factor in Game 6. We wondered, you know, did Semi Ojeleye, did Brad Stevens figure out Giannis Antetokounmpo? And he basically gave the Dikembe finger wave to that bullshit. He didn't. No one figures out Giannis. Giannis is too good. Giannis had 23 shot attempts compared to his 10 in Game 5. He had 31 points, 14 rebounds. Giannis was a man in the middle. I mean, the Bucks had 50 points in the paint. Giannis was attacking. He looked great. So whatever Brad Stevens did in Game 5, he's going to have to go back to the table for Game 7. And I said this on Tapping the Keg yesterday. You guys can go back and listen to it. But we were talking about Game 7, and all of us have said that we don't think the Bucks can do it. I'll stand by that. I think Boston has the edge, and I think they are the favorite without question. But I said something to Mitch and Murph to sort of as the final say in this, because, you know, I have to get the final say. I'm the fucking CEO. That's kind of how this shit works. But I said, they have the best player on the court. Without question, they have the best player on the court. And in Game 7s, when the chips are down, the best player on the court shows up. And Giannis showed up in this game. I think Giannis is going to definitely show up in Game 7. I do not expect the Bucks to get blown out. I do not expect this. I expect it to be close. But the Bucks are going to have to play more of their style. They're going to have to play up pace. They're going to have to play transition. Exactly what they did in Game 6 is they have to emulate that in Game 7. I realize that is much easier said than done. I mean, Boston definitely feels more comfortable at home. And why I think that even if the Celtics do win, I see no way they beat Philadelphia. I just think they're too young. They just can't win on the road. I think they, you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they disappeared in certain spots last night. I mean, Tatum had a big shot to keep Boston close in the fourth quarter, but still, they just didn't really have it. And I actually think that Marcus Morris, Marcus Smart, are sort of a liability for Boston right now. I think both in Game 5 and Game 6 are trying to get theirs and trying to get their shots up, and they're definitely ruining the flow of Boston. You know, Brad Stevens was preaching it like, hey, you guys got to pass the ball more. You got to pass the ball more. Marcus Smart is a hell of a defender, and he's definitely a lightning rod, but that guy really hurts their offense. He definitely clogs their offense. He definitely wants to get some shots up. He has an irrational confidence for being a bad shooter. And so every time Marcus Smart puts up a shot, I could regret this tomorrow on Saturday, don't get me wrong, but I get excited because I'm like, okay, here we go. All right, that's fine. I'd rather have him shoot the ball. Put it this way. The Bucks get beat by Marcus Smart on Saturday night and he makes six threes or something fucking dumb. Fine. I can live with that. I can go to bed drunkenly after this wedding and say, okay, Marcus Smart beat us. That's fine. If Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or Terry Rozier does it, I mean, it's like, yeah, that's the story of the series. So we'll see if the Bucks can go to Philly on Monday night. That's when Game 1 would be. So that is very exciting. What is not exciting is, in maybe the worst luck I've had in quite some time, I have a wedding on Game 7. So it's at a resort up in Elkhart Lake, as mentioned earlier. And so there will probably be a bar close to where the reception is being held where I could probably sneak away and watch some of the game. I respect my dude Shannon. I'm gonna dive in and out. I'm probably gonna ask the Tapping the Keg crew for updates as the game goes on, because I'm like, all right, well, I can't really be on my phone, but I can at least get like text updates and know what's going on and keep myself in the loop. I know some of the guys there will rely on me for these updates. I understand that I have a role as a ardent sports fan, that's a role I play, and I accept it with great honor. So I'm not afraid to do these things. I think this is one of those things where Shannon's a huge sports fan. He'll understand that we'll maybe have a eye on the game, as long as it's not like, hey guys, don't go to the bar to watch the game. Because if you're telling me I'm not gonna go to the bar after I get a few beers in me, I'm going to probably go to the fucking bar. Like, that's just, I don't really listen to authority once I start drinking. I don't think anyone really does. So, yes, this is a conundrum. Mitch texted me after the game and goes, you got that Game 7 you wanted? And I go, I am just fucking stoked, man. I am just stoked. And it's no knock. I mean, you think this would be a good time for a wedding, you know? You don't think of Game 7s. So, yes, the Bucks do play. I will watch a game on DVR on Sunday, as I don't imagine I will be that in tuned with it, but I do imagine that yes, when the chips are down, if the game's close with 5 minutes left, I am going to the nearest TV and finding the game, and hopefully find people in Elkhart Lake actually give a shit about the Bucks. They won't have the draft on, so that'll be good because the draft will be over. The draft wraps up on Saturday afternoon, but it did get kicked off on Thursday night. Baker Mayfield, the top pick. I love it. I've been a big Baker guy. I don't know if Baker is an actual number one pick, but it's a fantastic for the Browns to stick to their guns, to not let people get in their way. That's the guy John Dorsey wanted. He took Baker Mayfield. That's fantastic. Also fantastic is getting another pick and then trading up and coming back to pick four picks later. That is what the Green Bay Packers did. I think people underestimate, I hope the pinheads understand how rare what Brian Gutekunst pulled off in his first draft. He said, okay, the Saints want to move up halfway through the draft to get Marcus Davenport, who's a project, who I think the Pack would have been okay on the Packers, but he would have needed some time. He would need some seasoning. And they give the Saints the pick. They trade down, Packer fans are freaking out like, oh, who's going to be there at 27? Who's going to be there at 27? Now, Harold Landry or Josh Jackson, who both didn't get picked in the first round, would have been there at that pick, by the way. Just a food for thought. Two guys who Murph had targeted, two guys who we've talked about throughout this draft process. They then move back up to draft Jair Alexander. Jair Alexander was a guy we did talk about on Tabbing the Keg, and I mentioned him because he was in Mike Mayock's draft, and I said, hey, you know, what do you think? And Murph had a little bit of a concern because he played in the ACC, and I get that. I get that there's no real, you know, it's all offense. But at the same time, I think you have to like what Jair Alexander brought to the table, especially the 2 years ago when Louisville was really good. Alexander was an absolute stud. He was a complete phenom. Now, he had some injuries this year, but the Packers obviously think that he can fit well in Mike Patton's system. He's a complete ball hawk. He's a guy who has a nose for the football. He's not afraid to tackle, even though he's short and kind of undersized. He's going to need to add a little bit of bulk just to, you know, play with today's NFL. And people say, well, maybe he's an all-time nickel cornerback. And even if he is, that's fine. I mean, if the Packers got a Casey Hayward replacement and a probably a better version and a more fast version, that's great. That's exactly what this team needs. This team needs more secondary help. So Alexander getting into the mix is fantastic. And the fact that he's a punt returner, I think that means it's sheets for Trevor Davis. I think Trevor Davis, it's been fun. It's been real. But I think you definitely can put Alexander back there. He has a double cut move. And that's something Mike Mayock, not to steal his thunder, but guy who can make a couple men miss. And if you can get a dynamic punt returner, that does so many big things for your offense and shortens the field and be fantastic. I really love what Alexander brings to the table. I just think he's the type of guy that the Packers have been looking for the last couple of years. These freak athletes who can just ball the fuck out. And that is exciting. And now I know that the pinheads are going to say, well, what about Derwin James? How do we let Derwin James go to the Los Angeles Chargers? Here's the thing. I like Derwin James. Don't get me wrong. But I agreed with Murph yesterday. If you listen to the podcast yesterday when we talk about Derwin James, Murph's like, I have no idea where he's going to go. We already have HaHa Clinton Dix. We have Josh Jones. Where the hell do you put Derwin James? I get that you can move him around. I get that the Packers have a different style of defense. But at the same time, I was right there with Murph. I like him like, you're right. There's no real spot for Derwin James. And it's clear Mike Patton wanted this guy. That was what Ian Rapoport said. And Mike Patton wanted Jair Alexander. So Mike Patton's been involved. And Mike Patton basically probably said the exact stuff that Murph and I are saying, probably more eloquently and more football guy-like. But that is exactly it. They didn't have room for Derwin James. Unfortunately, what the Packers draft, if the Packers didn't draft a guy like Josh Jones, Derwin James is getting picked at 14. I hope that's understood. That, yes, that does add some pressure on Josh Jones. Fine. But the fact of the matter is they already have a Derwin James type. And now, could he be better than Josh Jones? Yeah, probably he could. But that's a very subjective thing. And we might not know that for years to come. So for Packer fans to be all upset at what Gutekunst done is fucking ridiculous. It is, he got another pick for next year. The Saints think they can be a Super Bowl contender. The Saints think that pick is going to be in the late first round. Now, if the Saints stumble or the Saints aren't as good and that pick is around 20 and the Packers do succeed, so Packers may have two picks in the first round, just like New England did. And New England got a guard and a running back in that draft. They didn't get a quarterback. Some people thought they did. And the Packers could have an opportunity to do a ton of things in the 2019 draft, which I have no idea if that's going to be better or worse than 2018. And you know what? Even if they wanted to dangle, they could dangle that thing in so many different ways. I don't know if they will. I'm sure they'll keep it. But they can do a lot with that second pick. That's awesome. And I would not be surprised with all the picks they have if they move up today. I think there are a lot of good players left on the board. Yeah, I just mentioned Jackson. I mentioned Landry. We are a big Anthony Miller fan base. Murph and I both love Anthony Miller. We think Anthony Miller has some major potential in terms of a day two receiver. I do think this is where the Packers get a receiver. I would be shocked if the Packers do not come away with a receiver tonight. Michael Gallup's another name. Jamon Moore is a player that Murph had mentioned. I think that there are a lot of different talents that are still available. Will Hernandez is an offensive guard who might not be there when the Packers pick. Connor Williams from Texas is another name who's worth watching. Josh Sweat, maybe a day three pick, but a guy who could end up being a factor for the Packers. And yeah, there are players. Lorenzo Carter is another name Murph mentioned who could be another edge rusher for the Packers. So I think in day two, we'll see at least a receiver. I would not be surprised if they get a tackle as well. Connor Williams, I think, would be a name who may not be there at 45, but if he's around, I could see the Packers doing that. And to wrap up the podcast, we're going to just chat a little bit about the Brewers. I did not watch much of the game last night with everything going on. Brewers had a chance in the ninth to come back from being down 1-0. Lorenzo Cain got on, then Ryan Braun got on with an infield single after Christian Yelich grounded into a very rare double play, just up the middle, but played the shift perfectly. And Travis Shaw had a deep drive to left field. It went to the warning track before getting caught up in the Wrigley air. So Brewers lose again to the Cubs. This is now their fourth loss to the Cubs. You could say it's concerning, but I'm not there yet. I know. I guess it's only concerning from the fact that you have to start winning games against your division because this division could be very close down the stretch, and you do not want to be the team with the weak division record. And to think the Brewers are frauds just based off one game is foolish. Kyle Hendricks has been a good pitcher against Milwaukee throughout his time with Chicago. He was fantastic last night. He held the Brewers in check. And Ryan Braun, you know, they asked Ryan Braun, like, hey, Chase Anderson pitched well, you know, are there any sort of moral victories? And Ryan Braun basically said, we're too good of a team to have moral victories, which I fucking love. If that is the attitude that the Brewers are coming in with, fuck yes. That is exactly what we want. I think that's what you want to see from the Milwaukee Brewers. And they, yes, so it is known right now. And so you look at the matchups the rest of the way for this weekend. So Brett Suter pitches this afternoon against Yu Darvish. That's going to be a tough spot for Brett Suter. Cubs could roll him a little bit. Yu Darvish has been not great. He hasn't been able to get to the fifth inning in any of his four starts. He gave up 5 runs to the Rockies. He did pitch well against the Brewers. So 3 of his 4 starts, the Brewers were the only team that he was able to get to the sixth inning. So maybe the Brewers' luck can change against Yu Darvish. He does struggle against lefties, so I definitely could see a big Travis Shaw game. Quintana goes on Saturday. He was great against the Brewers earlier this year. Junior Guerra has been awesome so far. He will be the Brewers' Saturday pitcher. And then on Sunday, Zach Davies, who's also been putting his stuff together, will then face Tyler Chatwood. Tyler Chatwood is he got roughed up by the Brewers in 2 games last year with a 7.71 ERA versus Milwaukee. So Milwaukee does have some good underlying numbers against Chatwood. So if the Brewers get a sweep, or I'm sorry, not a sweep. If the Brewers get 2 out of 4 against Chicago, that's all that matters. I'd like to see them win this afternoon to kind of keep pace and then sort of see what happens on Saturday and Sunday. You'd hate for it to the Brewers to lose today, and then you're like, well, you at least have to get one on Saturday or Sunday to avoid a sweep. Because I think that takes the air out of the balloon. And yes, it does not make the Brewers frauds. Like, even if they lose 3 of 4, the Brewers are still a good team. They just have to figure out how to play the Chicago Cubs. They have to figure out how to get hits against the Chicago Cubs. I think the Brewers are pressing a little bit against Chicago, and they need to treat every team like they're Cincinnati, Miami, Kansas City. That's how you got to act, and that's how you got to play. So one of the things, this is a little segment, and I do have to get going, but I do want to just touch on the Kanye West, Donald Trump thing, because I think it's an interesting topic. And I'm, you know, I do some social media in my day life, but I also just feel like it's worth having a discussion about. I didn't necessarily want to put it in the intro because if you don't want to hear about this, like, feel free to turn off the podcast. We'll talk to you Saturday or talk to you Sunday and go ahead. It's not that I am a big Donald Trump supporter. I'm not. But at the same time, I don't think it's right of us as a country to tell Kanye West what to do. I feel like it's the exact same thing with the Laura Ingraham situation, who's a whack job. But she told LeBron James, hey, shut up and dribble. Like, you're not here. We don't care about your opinion. That's what she said. The same people who admonished Ingram, who told Ingram that that is wrong and that she should not be doing that, are basically telling Kanye West the same fucking thing. And I don't get it. I don't get it. And to say Kanye is alt-right Kanye. That's not, Kanye West isn't alt-right. Just because you support ideas or you support somebody in a sense, it doesn't immediately make you an alt-right person. That term has got so twisted and turned that we've lost the sense of what it actually is. And because someone speaks out against what the overall groupthink believes in, it's suddenly a problem. Kanye West can do whatever the fuck he wants. Anyone can say whatever they really feel, as long as it's done with, you know, yeah, there are certain things that are, you know, racial or that are sexist or misogynistic that, yes, you should not say. But Kanye hasn't violated any of those things. Kanye hasn't done one thing. And if you say, just because you're supporting Candace Owens or you're supporting Donald Trump, that immediately throws you in that bucket. It's guilt by association. I could find 100 other people that you say you support, and now you're associating yourself with them, and that immediately makes you this, this, and this. It's just not how things are done. And yet in 2018, we're so quick to do that. We're so quick to pull the trigger. We're so quick to get those hot takes out. So Kanye can keep doing what he wants. He is my boy. He's one of my favorite artists. He is my favorite artist. I'm still my favorite artist. I'm not going to boycott Kanye. I'm not going to stop listening to his music. He's still that dude. He's still a great musician. And I hope that people still like him for his music. I've always said that about him. People are like, I hate Kanye. Terrible personality. He's just an asshole. Kanye, if that's you, then I would say that you should maybe, yeah, that's fine. Then stop listening. Why? He'll have other people that are listening to him. So I did want to wrap it up with that. I'd love to hear your feedback. StoneTapWI. Hit me up on Twitter. Tell me if I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm a fucking idiot. I'll be okay with that. I can live with you disagreeing with me on this topic. So we'll be back Sunday, taking a day off. Murph will be back to give his draft recap, maybe talk game 7. Who knows? Maybe he'll get Mitch Pratt on the line. We'll get a little half a keg and have those guys talk through it on Sunday. Granted, if I know Mitchie is going to be in his cuffs for game 7. So, all right, guys, StoneTapWI is where you can find us on all the sites. We will chat with you on Monday. Look forward to talking to you then. All right, guys, take care. Bye.